From the Mighty 990 Broadcast Center, it's time to Wake Up Memphis.
And good morning, Memphis. Welcome to the morning show. Hope you are all doing well on this National Day of Prayer. And coming up in the program, we're going to share different ways you can get out in the community and get on your knees and pray to God to help us get out of this mess. Genuinely, I think when you look at the event, you heard the top of the hour newscast, the riots are still happening across the country. They're not protest. There's only one place we can genuinely go to, and that is to our knees and ask for God's guidance through these incredibly difficult times. I mean, I would say that one of the reasons we are in the crux culturally that we are in is for that exact reason, that we completely have forgotten about what made this country great. And genuinely, I believe that is a foundation based on Christian Judeo principles, and no longer. And it's very clear if you look at the world. But as you heard, is anybody else just completely sick and tired of being sick and tired of these whiny, spoiled, annoying brats? They started all over again this morning. You and UCLA, for example, a complete mess. Officers with the LAPD and the California Highway Patrol seen again this morning dismantling the anti-Israel pro-Hamas encampment. The sound of flashbangs could be heard as officers in riot gear approached a plywood wall. So they constructed a wall yesterday. I'm not making this up. So authority, law enforcement could not come inside their little camp. Demonstrators in masks attempted to defend their encampment, reading this by Fox News, so that folks couldn't interfere with their efforts. Police moved in on campus after ordering their unlawful assembly gathered in their big plaza, unlawful. And that happened Wednesday evening. They went in around 1:20 this morning. So this is all still happening, making their first sweep, arresting lots of different of these pro-Hamas demonstrators. You can hear, we've got some audio, and we'll play this coming up. They've already suspended classes and canceled classes for the rest of the semester. Imagine that. Dylan, you're getting ready to graduate. You are just trying to get your classes done. You have what is it? Senior fever? What do people call it? I don't know. When I was last semester, I was over it.
We can go with senior fever.
Cool. And the narrative right now is shifting when it comes to these protests. Have you noticed it? So the universities are trying to save their ass by saying that these are outside demonstrators. You're going to start hearing that. Just get ready. These are people that are outside. They're backed and they're funded by George Soros, and it's reprehensible and they're anti-Semitic, but these aren't our students. Disagree 100%. Those are students. And the reason I know they're students is because they've got their freaking to staff and faculty and teachers right alongside with them. So the apple's not falling far from the tree. I'm over it. I was watching TV last night, and Dylan, you know I rarely do, but I was watching cable, and every one of these universities were coming forward, and they were like, we condemn, but as we look and sift through some of these thugs on campus, we don't claim them. They're not ours. Yes, they are. They are yours. But there is some silver lining. So yesterday we talked about the frat dudes. And this story is up on ToddStarnes.com. This was at the University of North Carolina. Well, I do have some updates. This is really neat. So those UNC frat boys, they not only are being hailed as American heroes, which they are, the GoFundMe link that we mentioned briefly has blown up, went viral. And I checked it this morning, over $200,000 and some change. $200,000 in 24 hours. I love America. Just when you thought it couldn't get better. No, I actually take it back. I love America. So it's for the rager. That is going to be what this fund ultimately supports and provides for these young patriots, which is rather amazing. So there was some video that came out So if you see the photo, and again, it's on toddstarnes.com, these boys, these men, stood and protected the flag for over an hour. And the photo, which is iconic, it needs to be the photo of the year, they're drenched. And people were wondering if it was raining in North Carolina that day. No. I mean, they were being pelted. The objects were being thrown at them. They were throwing Gatorade, bottles of liquids at these guys. And they stood at that flagpole for an hour, making sure that the flag did not touch the ground. I mean, how remarkable is that? So the faces of these frat boys, I think, is what I love most, because they're just smirking and videoing these pro-Hamas little spoiled brats that are all wearing God knows what. I don't even want to know. I mean, they were half uncovered. They've got the gauges, the pink and purple hair. And I tweeted this out yesterday. I've never met a demonstrator, an activist that's a 10. Those kids are some of the ugliest freaking kids. And Dylan, I am really struggling with my language. I woke up in a really grumpy mood, and I don't know why. I'm going to get better as the day progresses, but I watched these demonstrations happening this morning and I got really pissed, to be honest. Full disclosure. But I'm already starting to feel better because I'm going somewhere with this story. So you've got the two different camps. You've got the frat bros. They're wearing what, the khakis, the polos. They've got a good haircut. They've got a good head on their shoulders because they actually have parents that love them. Maybe showed them a good thing here or there. And then you've got these alphabet. Oh my God. Like their intersectionality, which means essentially they have a pride flag in one hand. On the other hand, they've got a pro Hamas flag. On their shirts, it says something about getting abortions. And they just look dead inside. Their eyes, just, there's nothing up there. Like, they've lost their joy. They've lost their humanity. I mean, good reason. I mean, they're screaming to kill the Jews. So this is all happening in real time. And the frat boys pull out their phones and start videoing these monsters. And here was one exchange. Dylan, do we have this? Where one of the frat boys was like, "You're so fat." Take a listen to this.
"That's right, put me on camera. I work for myself. Take off your hijab and get a job. You guys are all fat, ugly, and broke. Take off your hijab and get a job. Why don't you get a job?"
So there is one of them saying, like, basically, "You're fat. You need to go get a job. Get out of my face." And I think that was a group of radical dudes, which I wouldn't call them dudes. Soy boys. Here was another moment where one of the UNC frat boys responded to this woke chick. And she, let's just say, she hasn't seen a salad in a year. Okay? That's all I'm going to say about this woke chick. And here's what he had to tell her. Take a listen in cut 11.
"Yeah, there's a you. It's a war.
Hey, bro, lose some weight.
Hey, don't even talk to that.
So just so I don't get in trouble, Dylan and Parker, we don't condone name calling. But in this circumstance, yes, we do. Fight back, punch back. I don't care. I mean, they're the dregs of society. And I'm really tired because good people like the frat boys and like Dylan and Parker over there, we've been told growing up we play by the rules. And when law enforcement or a school administration official says you can't do this, we listen to them generally. Because that's how we were taught. Obedience is key. Now, these activists, they haven't listened to an authoritative figure clearly ever since they were like two. So typically you've got these faculty, these school administrators, they kowtow to the mob. And I'm tired of that. And you've got, like I said, the faculty, the teachers, they're right alongside the mob. So at what point do good students, they don't even have to be Jewish students, fight back and say enough is enough? That's what we saw with those frat boys. And that's why I think they've gone viral. and that American, that photo with them hoisting up the American flag, ripping down the Hamas flag, should be photo of the year. What say you? 901-260-5926. Sam, already feeling better, Dylan. So to help us feel even better, the UNC interim chancellor at the North Carolina school, his name is Lee Roberts. While this is happening, and he walks out to the university where he's the top dog at, and he sees a non-American flag on his flagpole, he had it. Take a listen to this.
This university doesn't belong to a small group of protesters. It belongs to every citizen of North Carolina. Everybody in North Carolina. Everybody who goes to school here. Everybody who lives and works here. The flag represents all of us. To take down that flag and put up another flag, no matter what other flag it is, that's antithetical to who we are, what this university stands for, what we have done for 229 years.
Well done, Chancellor Lee Roberts. That's what we need to see at every one of these college campuses in America. And had we have seen this leadership, we wouldn't be dealing with these clashes, these very violent clashes, Thursday morning. President Biden doing the unthinkable, unprecedented, uniting the country, pulling in factions from the left and from the right, the progressives to the conservatives, the MAGA boys and the pro-Hamas alphabet people at a campus yesterday. Trump supporters and pro-Palestine protesters appeared to find something in common, finding common ground, as both started chanting this. I want you to take a listen here. Now, it's a good day in America. We can all agree on something. Say it with me, everyone. Joe Biden. And that's all I've got to say. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the morning show. Glad to have you guys joining us on Morning Drive. Let's go. All right. So I spent my day yesterday going through MPD's Twitter account. And the reason I spent my entire day scrolling and scrolling is because there's no database. So a lot of people are asking us where we get our data from, because yesterday we dropped how many shootings there were in the month of April. How many shootings do you think there were? No, it's not just shootings. How many people do you think were injured in 30 days, April 1st to April 30th? 91, at least, because by the time I got done scrolling through the month of April, I probably missed a couple. So that's being very generous. 25 people were not only shot, they were killed. And so what we've done, because if you go to any local news station, they will not release this information. The Memphis Police Department, they're not going to give you these stats. The Crime Commission is going to gaslight you and say that crime is going down. The mayor's right alongside the Crime Commission and City Hall. So without the time that it took to go and basically spend an hour and some change going through all of their mess on their Twitter page, we wouldn't have this information. No one would know this. And when you look down through day by day, just how many people were shot, this isn't normal. Except for maybe what happened on 420. Because on 420, there were like 15 people shot. That's my argument against legalizing weed. We're going to jump into that because Congressman Steve Cohen, with all of the problems in District 9, he went to the House floor and talked about why we need to legalize weed. Does that sound like a smart thing to be doing right now? I mean, in Memphis, it's basically legalized because I haven't seen anybody get picked up for smoking pot. I am the kid that runs through Tom Lee Park and I get secondhand high every time I do it. And there's plenty of police around. But nonetheless, that's his priority. Back to this list. So we drop it yesterday. It enrages leftists in this city when we drop these numbers. And Dylan Parker, I am trying to understand why. Because it's one thing to disagree with KWAM for our conservative ideals and our takes on things. But this is void of a bias. These are just stats. You can't really disagree with the stats because they all came from the MPD, which is apolitical. And that is probably one of our more controversial posts when we post how many people were shot, how many people died in these shootings across the city. And I think it's because the truth is starting to finally penetrate the lies that just continue churning out of City Hall, that everything is good, this is a utopia, and we know that that's not true. And the numbers just reinforce the facts and the truth. And when truth confronts darkness and lies, it's like pouring salt on a slug, okay? It just fizzles up and pops and bursts, and these people and these leftists explode. We've seen an effort by even some city council members, Tammy Sawyer. They're all enraged at our radio station, and they will not stop until something happens to the radio station. And I'm not being Alex Jones this morning, but I kind of do like Alex Jones sometimes. Genuinely, they're so angry at this one local news station that is a local business. And I was talking to Todd about this. They view KWAM as oppressors, and the folks on the receiving end of our content are the oppressed. And so to resist and fight against your oppressor, you can do anything. You can say anything towards this station. That's why we're so used to being called horrible names every single day on our social media accounts. But it matters. It matters because yesterday we got a message by one of our followers on X. His name is Malcolm Platt. And he said this, and he pulled one of the stats from our post, and he said, my brother was actually one of those that were shot on the 29th. And here's what he said. A gunman shot and killed my older brother. He lost his life to an animal for nothing. Notably, let me jump in here, the activist then went after Malcolm for calling the thugs an animal and called him a racist. I don't know the skin color of this person. I mean, way to jump to a conclusion. He goes on to say, Malcolm here, these are becoming everyday occurrences affecting the good people in Memphis in increasingly negative ways. Should this trend persist, Memphis will not only witness a resurgence of white flight, but also a common surge in black flight from young black families who share more common values with their white neighbors in the suburbs and bedroom communities around Memphis than the gangbangers on the street. So well said. Malcolm actually was interviewed by Channel 5, and here's what he had to say about his brother. Now let me fill in the details of this shooting. So his brother, who's older, was from Nashville. He came and visited his two brothers in Memphis, and this happened on Friday night. There was road rage, and he just so happened to be caught up in the crossfire. At 7 o'clock, this was on Coleman Road. Take a listen to Malcolm here in 21.
I told him that I wish that I shared his faith in humanity, but I don't. And that if he wasn't careful, he was going to end up dead. And it happened. Frank and Michael pulled up next to him. He stuck a barrel of an AR-15, I assume, out of the window and fired off three rounds. And one of them struck my brother and killed him. If you have any compassion in your soul at all, if you have a relative that you hold dear, that you don't want to see become another statistic in this city, and you know something about this individual, speak up.
And of course, we're praying for the Platt family this morning. This is the mayor and the district attorney will hold a press conference on crime later today. That's going to be interesting because yesterday we learned that we got a new office in City Hall. It is called the Arts and Cultures Office, including at least two city administration staff members. It will be jointly funded by the city, so you, the taxpayer, and grant money. Now, I'm going to rebrand this as the Arts and Crafts. This reminds me of VBS. Arts and Craft Night at VBS in the summer was my favorite night. So it's the Arts and Craft Department, and this is going to recruit young, diverse talent and folks that are eyeing other quote-unquote cool cities like Nashville. Take a listen to this. So they brought in this guy that does murals in New York City, Chicago, and so they brought him to Memphis. They sent him down to South Main, and he's going to make our city look like other cities. You'll also hear the mayor in this soundbite. Take a listen.
Our newly elected Memphis Mayor Paul Young says he's got the formula to bring more folks here and transform our beloved Bluff City. You ready to know what these two elements are?
I am.
All right. We're talking arts and culture.
He and
says
crafts.
Those are the keys.
He raised his right hand, took the oath of office on January 1. Now it's May 1, and Action News 5 Stephanie Douglas spoke with the mayor and heard from an artist who says he's painting with a purpose, empowering Memphis.
For a city to thrive, you need to really pour into the arts and culture of this city. Wherever I went, I saw a lot of public art, you know, so I just wanted to bring that to Memphis, you know, and I was like, there's no reason why we shouldn't have as many murals as Philly or New York or Chicago. So I wanted to display how beautiful it is where you are right now. So you have like the state bird, the mockingbird, you have the state flower, the iris up there. And I just wanted to show like, you know, you don't have to leave to rediscover and, you know, how great Memphis is.
We think about youth programming, we want to make sure that arts is prominent. As we think about economic development and job recruitment, we want to make sure that we are highlighting our artistic art assets to those that we are recruiting to this community.
All right, so that audio obtained by Channel 5, the mayor believes to attract more people and transform Memphis to the next level, we've got to bring in a dude that's a painter that is going to create a state bird, the mockingbird. Do we have a state flower? I guess so. We're going to plaster that all over downtown, and that is how we're going to separate our city from any other city in America with this arts and crafts department. We love to see it, as the cool kids say. All right, on the other side of the break, we've got Senator Bill Hagerty dropping by the show. Don't go away.
The Mid-South's home for 2024 election coverage. The Mighty 990 AM and 107.9 FM. KWAM. Armstrong and Getty. Weekday mornings at 9 on the Mighty 990 AM. And streaming live on the KWAM app.
This news exclusively on CBS News. The Biden administration is considering a plan to allow some Palestinian refugees to come here to the United States. That's according to internal federal government documents that were obtained by CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez. According to the plan, some Palestinians fleeing the war would be offered a permanent safe haven here in the U.S. And one option under consideration is to allow those who have immediate family members who are either American citizens or permanent residents to enter the country if they pass various background checks first. The plans would require coordination with Egypt, which has so far refused to allow large numbers of people from Gaza to cross the border into that country.
Welcome back to the morning show. CBS with that report, the Biden administration considering bringing folks from Gaza to right here to the United States. How do we screen them? And will they assimilate well? We've seen what that looks like in Wisconsin and Michigan. Here to break down that and a couple different national stories affecting us in the state of Tennessee is our Senator Bill Hagerty. Senator, thanks for joining the morning show. How are you?
I'm well. It's always good to be with you. Thanks.
So we've welcomed in millions of illegals down at our southern border. When you look at the open border crisis, our country's full. We don't know who's in the country. Then we're going to start opening up our doors for folks in the Middle East. What do you make of this latest report coming from CBS per the Biden administration?
I don't know why anyone should be surprised at all. Joe Biden is willing to welcome people to America who are on the terrorist watch list. He's willing to expose our nation to risks that are intolerable, in my view and yours. But he's willing to do this for one very basic reason. He is pledged to transform America. We heard this during the campaign. I don't think Americans thought about what that actually meant. But what Joe Biden is doing is he's bringing people here to change the whole voting apparatus here in America. And these people don't have to actually cast a vote. They just have to be present in a given state to reshape the electoral map of America. Here's what's going on. The interpretation that's underway right now of the census is that anybody, any person that is counted in a given state is being used to allocate congressional districts and electoral votes. So the apportionment of the United States, we have a fixed number of congressional seats, but that apportionment takes place based on the number of illegal aliens that are here as well as citizens. We don't count people that are here on vacation. We don't count people that are here for, temporary work assignment. We certainly don't count people that are here as diplomats. But what we find is that the Democrats, and frankly, every single Democrat in the United States Senate voted to continue doing this. Democrats want to count illegal aliens for the purposes of allocating congressional districts. If you look at the people that Joe Biden has admitted into America illegally in his watch, this is about 3.5 years worth of somewhere between 8 and 10 million people. That would be 13 extra congressional seats that they have gained for themselves. 13 congressional seats. You think about the control right now in the Congress. It's down to a two-person margin. You think about how close some of these elections have been in the presidential races. 13 electoral votes. This is what the Democrats are doing. It's all about power. It's all about maintaining power, not losing power from states like New York, Illinois, California, places where they have erected these sanctuary cities, as they call them, where they have pledged not to enforce the immigration laws. They're doing this to create magnets to basically attract all of these illegal migrants that have come into the country. They're doing this to have these illegal aliens move to their states and then count them in the rolls so that they can keep congressional seats there in California, Illinois, and New York, and not let them come to places like Tennessee where citizens are actually moving.
So correct on that. And in the face, Senator, of their own party, that poll that came out recently, I don't have it in front of me, but it showed the majority of Democrats favor Trump's border policies. So they're willing to potentially even quote, maybe even lose an election over this. But the goal is to get as many here as possible so they can retain that control. You're exactly right. Did want to get your response to what is happening at these college campuses. This morning, UCLA protesters held a press conference where they said they are actually the victims of, quote, life-threatening assault at the hands of Zionists. They're now complaining that police didn't do enough to intervene, and their demands include now abolishing police. This, as President Biden announced earlier this week, that his administration is going to approve $6.1 billion in student debt cancellation for 317,000 borrowers. So we're funding these spoiled, whiny little brats that also are very anti-Semitic. Unbelievable.
It totally is unbelievable. And there are two points that you raised that I think offend Tennesseans dramatically. One is what's happening on the college campuses right now. Why don't we enforce the rules? You know this would be the case if we had people marching on campus that were somehow suggesting that men shouldn't be participating in women's sports. I'll just bring that up. If that were taking place, these college campuses would lock this down immediately. They would stop it. They would bring it to an end. They're not enforcing their own rules. These colleges that are doing this deserve to have the most swift repercussions possible. And they're getting federal funds. They're violating the law. We should remove that. But with respect to the other thing you raised, this is one of the most blatant vote buying efforts that I've ever seen. This is the Biden administration's attempts to, quote, forgive student loans. I don't know about you, but I was the first male in my family to graduate from college. I borrowed money to do that. I felt it was a great privilege for me to attend college. And I never thought in my life that my classmates who didn't go to college should pay for that. But what we're doing, what we're observing right now is the Biden administration parking the bill on the 87% of Americans who don't have college debt, just to buy the votes of the 13% that do. And as you say, it's even more offensive when you think about these whiny, you know, nose wipes that you know, are over there protesting. They're not doing anything with respect to learning. They're doing everything to basically destroy America. I just don't think Americans are going to go for this. Certainly Tennesseans are not going to go for this. And I think it's going to backfire on Joe Biden dramatically.
Want to talk about preserving another issue that is top of mind for folks in Tennessee, and that is the right to bear arms, the Second Amendment. We've seen an attack on this by this administration. For example, the vice president just recently announced a new gun sale rule in a bid to crack down on so-called gun show loopholes. And you've got the Department of Commerce, the Bureau of Industry and Security rule that would permanently extend the current pause on firearm export licenses. Can you explain that for our listeners and what you're doing to stop this attack on our Second Amendment right?
Well, I think the people that are listening to us this morning will completely understand this because it's Joe Biden's version of Barack Obama's Operation Choke Point. This is Operation Choke Point 2.0. They're using the regulatory process to eliminate the export of anything having to do with the firearms industry. Tennessee has a robust firearms manufacturing supply chain in it. We have manufacturers, we have people that support those manufacturers in Tennessee that support thousands of Tennessee jobs. What this is doing is killing those industries. These companies have already manufactured the product that has been bought overseas. The Commerce Department is not allowing the export of that product. They're basically shutting it down in the warehouse. They're causing these companies to not get paid, not able to ship their product. They're hoping that they go out of business. The Biden administration is trying to basically end run, if you will, the legislative process, because that's where this should be solved. If the American public were for this, we would have a law that would put that in place. We don't, because it would never pass through the House and the Senate. But they're using the regulators to basically go in and kill industries. In this case, an industry that they disfavor, that Biden disfavors, is the firearms industry and anything related to that. That's what's happening right now. It's Operation Choke Point 2.0, again, attacking the firearms industry, attacking American jobs, Tennessee jobs. And I have put forward a Congressional Review Act resolution of disapproval. We're going to block this. We're going to undo this. We're going to stop this damaging behavior. Mm.
All right, Senator Bill Hagerty on our phone line this morning. Senator, we appreciate your time this morning. I know you've got a busy schedule. Thank you for fighting for us in West Tennessee, but for all Tennesseans across the state. Sure. Thanks for dropping by.
Great to be with you this morning. Thank you so much.
All right. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. And you need to write this down because on the other side of the break, we are going to do a giveaway. You've been hearing the spots, the commercials, on our big Mother's Day giveaway. So on the other side, we're going to break that down, but you've got to be one of our lucky callers to get entered into that big raffle drawing and also your chance to win one of our cool Bell Tower coffee mugs embalmed with a KWAM logo and also one of Todd's books. 901-260-5926. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the morning show. Glad to have you guys with us on Morning Drive. So this Mother's Day, we've partnered up with some of the best businesses in the Mid-South. And very excited to throw out this chance for you guys to enter a drawing for the grand prize. So what you could win, write it down, a box of Dinstrol's fine candies, beautiful flowers from Pews, the best. We're going to get those guys on. And Rebecca with Dinstrol's. Also, a spa day at Spa Collierville. Or a steak dinner. And I love steak. At Jim's Place and Grill. So what we're going to do, we're going to open up our phone lines. Be caller number 3 at 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. You be caller number 3. You get entered into this drawing. But if you are caller number 3, the lucky one, you'll also get our exclusive KWAM mug and a copy of one of Todd's books. So be caller number 391-260-5926. Dylan, put up our news sounder bed because this is very exciting. We're going to roll through some of these headlines. Taylor Swift, we'll start here, is now making history once again on the Billboard charts. You heard that music coming back from break, thanks to a massive debut of her new album, The Tortured Poet Department. Billboard announced that Taylor Swift has swept the top 14 spots on the Billboard Hot 100. It's a new record for any artist in history. Wow, so that's incredible. So you've got 14 of those top spots being dominated by her songs. Here are the top four songs, 14 songs if you're interesting. Fortnite featuring Post Malone. It is a good song, by the way. Down Bad. I can't read down through all of these. I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. The Tortured Poets Department. So Long London. My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys. But Daddy, I Love Him. Florida. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. Guilty as Sin. Fresh Out of Summer. The More You Know. The CDC has issued a new warning about HIV risks associated with a cosmetic procedure called the vampire facial. So I'm just going to go out here and say, don't get one of these. Don't get on a plane and go to Mexico and get one of these, because a lot of people are doing it because they say it's going to unage you. Proponents of the vampire facials say that it beautifies the skin and can reduce wrinkles and acne scars. Why it's called a vampire facial is because they actually draw the patient's blood and then pump that blood back into their face. Don't do that. Meanwhile, a Catholic priest stole $40,000 of a church money to play Candy Crush slot machine games, according to police. So this Catholic priest in Pennsylvania is accused of stealing more than $40,000 from the church to play Candy Crush. My mom would do something like this, but she wouldn't steal from my dad's parishioners to do so. Pennsylvania State Police said Pastor Lawrence, or Priest Lawrence, spent those alleged funds on the Wizard of Oz slots, Candy Crush Saga, Cash Frenzy, Mario Kart Tour, Pokemon Go. Dylan, I thought Candy Crush was like a thing of the past.
Me too.
People are still playing this.
Apparently.
So according to this WHYY report, police said there were over 2,000 transactions marked as gaming from September 2019 to June 2022. Priest Lawrence allegedly told authorities that he was not gambling, but powering up. What does that mean? What does that mean? Authorities said the credit card was also used to buy gifts for his goddaughter, like an Amazon Fire tablet and a chemistry set. So the Archdiocese issued the following statement in response to this incident. Father Lawrence was placed on administrative leave by the Archdiocese. His administrative leave followed a review of blah, 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 blah. Basically, they're saying, come on, Father, do better. Don't steal from the great folks at your parish. Now, this story involves a teacher in Ohio that made her way to Nashville, and now she's out of a job. So the termination of an Ohio school teacher who allegedly called out of work sick for 2 days to attend a concert in Nashville. So get this. Her name is Eileen Walbersh. She's an English teacher at Lakota West High School in Pennsylvania. Ohio, rather. Documents from April 2nd show that the teacher falsified sick leave on February 8th and 9th. The problem with Miss Washburn was that she told several of her colleagues that she wasn't actually sick at all. She's playing hooky. But she had her doctor sign off on the sick papers. She was instead attending an at a rave at a concert in Nashville. This is such a bad look. The school board said Washburn refused to answer questions regarding her whereabouts during that time and refused to discuss specifics on her alleged need for sick leave. This is unbelievable. Can you imagine? An Air Japan flight from Dallas to Tokyo was canceled after the pilot reportedly became, quote, too drunk to fly, and a replacement could not be found in time for the next morning departure. The pilot, who was not named, became highly intoxicated after dining with crew members in Dallas last Tuesday. The night's festivities continued at the hotel lounge, where the pilot continued drinking and continued into his room drinking. The aircraft was scheduled to depart from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport to Tokyo last Wednesday around 11 o'clock. But after the incident, he was a no-show, and they had to cancel the flight. It's better that they canceled the flight as opposed to having a drunk pilot. Wouldn't you agree? And then finally, I could see myself concocting this. When I went to school in Florida, they had the HO2 lanes? You know, the extra lane where if you have two passengers or more, you get out into the left lane and you can just zip down the interstate. Well, according to the California Highway Patrol, they busted a driver in the carpool lane who had a plastic dummy in the passenger seat of his vehicle. So he made a fake person. The CHP said in an Instagram post they found the driver's fake friend after pulling the driver over for allegedly crossing double yellow lines. The CHP joked about the plastic dummy and said it was the goatee was sharp, just a little too sharp. So the driver's now facing a couple different violations. The minimum fine for a carpool violation is $490. Let's go to our phone lines. John, you are caller number 3. Congratulations, John. And welcome to the morning show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Of course. No, we appreciate it. So we're going to get you hooked up with one of Todd's books and also one of our KWAM mugs. But John, this Mother's Day, what do you love most about either your mom or maybe your wife who's a mother?
Well, my wife is a very passionate and patient lady, school teacher at that, teaches art. And she always has open arms and welcomes her children. Any of her class. She teaches over at Treadwell, and she's just excited to go to work and be around the elementary students.
Wow.
And I admire her for that.
Oh, John, I mean, my gosh, I've seen some of the headlines. I mean, I respect any teacher. And to love showing up every single day and mentoring those young minds is pretty incredible. She sounds pretty special, John.
She is. She's a very, very loving, Christ-centered lady.
All right. Well, great, because she has now been entered into a drawing for a grand prize. Again, that could be a box of Dentsu's fine candies, beautiful flowers from Pugh's, spa day at Spa Collierville, or dinner at Jim's Place Grill. But stay on the phone line, because we are going to get you connected with your KWAM prize as well. John, thanks for dropping by.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate y'all's reporting on the real news and not the fake news.
Ah, I like that. Dylan, let's get that in a promotion. We are real news, and as John said, we're not fake news. Coming up in hour number 2, I've got a couple different local stories. Of course, the mayor and the district attorney, they're going to hold a big presser on crime. Now get ready, because they're going to tell you the crime is going down. This as gas stations across Memphis are banning balaclavas. Dylan, I think they were listening to the morning show, because yes, they're banning the face masks, balaclavas, and the folks that are shicing up. That story coming at you in hour number 2. 901-260-5926 is that telephone number, 901-260-5926. More on the other side. Don't go away.
Broadcast Center, it's time to wake up Memphis.
And welcome back to the morning show. Hour number 2, we're broadcasting live in East Memphis in the Principal Toyota Memphis studios this morning. Lot to get into. The president held a big rally in Wisconsin yesterday. We'll jump into that with Steve Gill coming up in about 15 minutes. Also, we've got the president of Memphis Friends of Israel, Jason Kaplan. He's going to be in studio reacting to the anti-Semitism that is rising all over college campuses in America. Also, how the White House has responded to these. You know, it's interesting. Real quick tangent. And again, Ben Dieter here. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to get into this local story. Don't worry. Where all of these gas stations are now banning face masks. And this copy from Fox 13, quite unbelievable. And we're going to get into it. But I did want to play this audio from KJP, the White House press secretary. So she was asked by Fox News' Peter Ducey on the report that these agitators, not only are there students, but we know that they're being paid and funded by George Soros. And here was her response. Take a listen in Cut 17.
Some of these encampments, they had matching tents. We're being told that there are professional outside agitators involved. We don't know if they're being paid to sow chaos by domestic folks or foreign entities. Does President Biden want his administration to find out who is funding some of these protests?
What I can say, I cannot speak to the organizations that are being reported that's on the ground. That is not something for me to speak to. That is obviously something that local governments, local officials, I keep saying local government, local officials are going to speak to. They'll have better information on that. What we have said, and I don't think I've iterated that yet from here, is that the DOJ and FBI is going to continue to offer support to universities and colleges in respect to federal laws. So that is something that the DOJ and FBI is doing. As far as local organizations and what is all being reported on the ground, that is something that local law enforcement certainly is looking into.
I understand that President Biden historically has spoken very forcefully about anti-Semitism. But this week he's not. He's MIA. Is he that worried about losing the youth vote with these protesters?
I'm going to be mindful. You're talking about youth vote. You're talking about 2024. No,
support of young people.
I have to say what I have to say, and just give me a second. So I'm not going to speak about somebody's doorbell. Is that a doorbell?
Yeah, that was an alarm.
An alarm. Okay. All right. I'll speak more broadly. I can't speak to youth and support and voters. That's not something I can do from here. The president has taken a lot of policy actions here that he knows that young people care about.
My gosh. First of all, the White House, you could get any information you wanted like that. But they don't want that information, and it's very clear. Because to Peter Ducey's point, and it was a point well made, they're worried about the left flank of the Democratic Party. So I got this story real quick. UCLA and the little savages running around, and this is still ongoing. This morning, clash is still continuing. LAPD, they're there. So the BDS movement is the boycott, divest, sanctions movement. It basically works to end any money that would go over to Israel. Well, Fox News obtained a Google Doc of a list of needs that these protesters on UCLA's campus were requesting. And this was basically created by the BDS movement. That's why I brought that up. These school officials are negotiating with the following demands. Here's what these kids, and I say kids because I push back on that this is all just outside agitators nonsense. No, these are kids. These are students. They're radically indoctrinated. Let's blame the students. We can talk about maybe some of the detractors, but I think largely these are actually these Ivy League students. Here's what they were asking. We would like headlamps, airsoft goggles, gas mask, and respirators, especially for our medics, skater helmets, shields. We need knee and elbow pads, rain ponchos. We'll also take some canopies if you've got some, utility gloves. Now, when it comes to medical needs, we'll take some EpiPens, non-steroid inhalers, headlamps. Here's the funniest part. So here's what they've got for food. And this is what they were asking as they are now in week number two of their protests. We'll take vegan food, shocker, right, coming from LA and even the East Coast. They wanted vegan food, gluten-free food, no packaged food, no coffee, no bagels, no bananas, no nuts. Good God. So anyways, unbelievable. And this is who we're negotiating with. Todd Starnes calling in this morning. Todd, what is your take on all of the news coming out of the morning show this morning?
I'm just very curious to know what they're doing with those knee pads.
Yeah, Todd, I don't want to know.
What kind of behavior is going on down there? That's insane. I will say this, one of the videos, and I've noticed that most of these protesters really do need to take a Jenny Craig class. it's really unfortunate, but I heard they're also asking for at least a gallon of hummus and a case of Febreze.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny, Todd, to your point. So I was reading a report. This is the UCL protesters held a press conference, and they said that they were actually the victims of life-threatening assaults at the hands of these Zionists, the Jewish kids, the kids that couldn't even go to their classes. So in the press conference, they had a couple different demands, and they said the police were not doing enough, and so they now are demanding that LA abolish their police department. And yet, the school continues to negotiate with these gluten-free, soy boy, whiny little brats.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing, Ben, and we're fortunate that here in Memphis, so far so good, everybody's behaving themselves, but this is really insane. And you do wonder, based on the current leadership, you know, what would Mayor Young actually do if these kinds of protests broke out here in Memphis? So maybe we should be counting our blessings that has not happened. Otherwise, the mayor would be out there with another public relations campaign. And, you know, I was listening to your comments about the mayor, and I think the honest to goodness, Ben, their solution is not to deal with the crime, but to convince everybody that there is no crime. It's the emperor has no clothes. That's the move here. That's the play. They're going to launch a massive PR campaign to convince people that we've got no crime here.
So to your point, he tweets out an article where he sat down with Forbes. And in this article, the headline said, "Say it loud, I'm black and proud." Okay? So they go through this piece and they say Memphis basically passed Detroit to become the largest black majority city in America. During his inauguration, this is what the writer's saying. I'll get to the mayor's quotes in one moment. Young, who is African-American, said he wants to show the world that a black city can be safe, prosperous, and creative. Here's his quote. "For far too long, that designation was taken as a source of negativity. I want it to be a source of pride. I do understand that it can feel alienating to some people, but if you listen to the story, if you listen to what I'm saying, it's not alienating. In fact, it's very inclusive in what I'm saying. We have a strength as a city that all of us should be proud and champion of." So what he's saying, we're going to take lessons from Nashville, a city that has experienced staggering growth. And what the mayor told the Forbes reporter was that they marketed themselves in Nashville as the hub of country music, and that is what defines Nashville. In Memphis, he says, "We are going to define our city as an African-American female tech talent per capita city." So essentially, a DEI city.
Yes, it's fascinating. If you rearrange those words, DEI means you die. And I think that's really where we're going. I mean, if he's going to take the city down this path, I think that the city will be doomed. I don't see it working out. I see that, you know, we saw what happened in Baton Rouge. We're going to be talking about this at 11 o'clock today on the national show, where in Baton Rouge, the suburbs actually successfully petition to secede from the city, and now St. George, Louisiana, will be one of the largest cities in Louisiana as a result of the secession. And if the mayor takes the city down that path, Ben, I suspect we may start seeing calls among the suburban towns to pull out of Shelby County.
Hmm. So after that was posted to X, the mayor turned off all comments on replies, Why do you think that is, where he does not care to hear from the folks of the city that he represents?
It's the head in the sand, and the mayor also is very thin-skinned. He cannot take any criticism at all. And I will say this, you can expect the attacks on KWAM to ramp up. And if you've been on social media, you already see it. And the narrative is that we are racist and we only report negative news. And we have yet to have anyone explain how this station is racist. And by the way, we do not silence dissent. We actually encourage people who disagree with us to call in. You can go onto our Twitter feeds. We do not block those people because we believe in free speech, contrary to some of the other media in town, as well as City Hall. But City Hall is waging a war right now against KWAM, and they want to try and marginalize us and neutralize us by accusing us of being racist. Well, you know what? This homie don't play that game.
Oh, Todd, you are appropriating. I better not see you shiced up when you come into the building later for your national show.
I'm getting a lot of definition right now.
Yeah. Get a balaclava. So one of the most, I guess, controversial things we posted was yesterday, Todd. And if you go to our X and if you go to our Stop Memphis Crime page, people are really fired up over one of our posts. And the post goes as following: at least 91 shot, 25 killed in shootings across Memphis in April. Follow Ben Dieter for news. That was deemed racist. How is that racist? That is the facts. If you've got a problem with the facts, you've got a problem with reality.
Look, that's it. And we appreciate Judge Joe Brown gave you a very nice shout out yesterday. And we appreciate that. And I think, and maybe you could, you know, ask your listeners, but I think they appreciate the fact that KWAM is out there sharing the news and information that the city does not want you to know. That's the issue, is that there's, and by the way, this is the only information that we've got. There's so much crime happening that they're not talking about, and everybody knows it, but the city is trying to bury all of this, and some might even go so far as to say they're trying to cover it up.
There is a plot at foot. All right, Todd, we're going to be listening to the big show. Coming up, you're going to be picking up the coverage of what's happening at these campuses. Anything else on deck? I know it's a 3-hour show, so you're covering a lot.
Big time. Yeah, we've got a major story bring. House Republicans passed the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act last night. Nobody bothered to read it. And Ben, as it is written, that law, which, well, it will be a law once the Senate and the President signs off on it, that law would actually outlaw parts of the Bible. So we're going to go through this.
Oh, crap.
It's insane. How do you not read this stuff? But, yeah, we're going to talk about it at 11 o'clock today on KWAM.
All right. Good stuff. We'll be listening. We're going to pick up the coverage on the other side, but we'll throw it out to our listeners. Is KWAM a controversial and some would even say racist station for providing what we did yesterday in the homicide and shooting tally that we released? Our number is 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. We'll be right back.
Check out the weather anytime at Mighty990.com.
Stations across Memphis are starting to put up signs like this one on their front doors. If you're wearing a ski mask just like this one, you either have to take it off or not allowed to be inside the store.
The ski mask kind of lets you know the crime's about to be committed.
Criminals covering their face is nothing new, but the face covering seen over and over in recent images of crime in Memphis are also becoming a more common fashion statement among young people that has many people worried and creating a negative and even fearful stereotype.
Because to me, every time I see a ski mask, there's a thing about somebody about to steal something.
Welcome back to the morning show. That report by Fox 13. And here to break down that and a lot of other different stories breaking out across the state, political contributor Steve Gill. So, Steve, you've got these gas stations in Memphis because the crime is so bad. They are now banning ski masks, balaclavas, or a shiesty, as I've come to learn. But the reporter says that these are fashion statements among young people. I mean, I'm a young person. I have never worn a face mask unless it was an airport under Dr. Fauci's role? What do you make of it?
Well, and the ski mask in particular, you know, again, at Memphis in about 2 weeks, it's going to start being 90 to 100 degrees with 200% humidity. If you're wearing a ski mask, you might as well be tattooing on your forehead, "I'm a robber, I'm an idiot," because that's you aren't going to be able to breathe. And you're right, we're seeing all these campus protests where the face masks are there, not because they're concerned about COVID. They're concerned about their identities being revealed. They're trying to hide who they are while they commit these violent, anti-Semitic, anti-American, pro-terrorist protests. And I think the Memphis convenience stores, the gas stations are doing the right thing. But who's going to be at the door enforcing it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I take issue with the copy because they say that all of these face masks are creating fearful stereotypes. No, the stereotype has become a thing because every one of these thugs that smash and grab these local businesses are wearing a face mask. I have yet to see one burglar, smash and grab robber, walk in there with their face unexposed. Okay, so that's where the stereotype comes from. But speaking of these,
you know that for a while they've had in these stores and convenience stores, the glass that separates the convenience store clerk from the customer. I think they're going to have, like you do with a lot of jewelry stores, where the clerk's going to have to look at you and push the button to allow the door to unlock to let you in. They're going to have electronic locks at the door where they can look, say, "Nope, I'm not pushing the button to let you in." And they're going to have bulletproof glass to keep people from shooting their way in. It's going to take more security than a sign.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. Several Vanderbilt University students gathered yesterday after noon to join in the nationwide protest, and I'm reading this copy by WSMV in Nashville, against the violence in Palestine. So that's how the media is framing it. So maybe not shocked that these kids in Nashville, in the South, are joining this crap that we're seeing on the East and West Coast, Steve.
Well, Vanderbilt's always tried to think of itself as an elite university, kind of the Harvard or the Yale of the South.
Yes.
So now they're trying to replicate what's going on at Columbia and these other places, I guess. I think they'll find that the Tennessee police are not as willing to cooperate as they are in Columbia and some of these other places, although you are starting to see the police step up. Most of them have been given do not interfere orders from their officials, so it's not the police fault that they're not enforcing the law. It's that they're being told what to do. And I pointed out from the beginning of this that this tolerance of the intolerable, I'm Hamas, we're going to do it over and over again, what happened on October 7th. And by the way, there were none of these protests on campus from October 7th for the few weeks before Israel did respond militarily. They weren't concerned about the violence against innocent men, women, and children, women being murdered and raped with their naked bodies dragged through the streets while these Palestinian peaceful citizens cheered and shouted, the same kinds of stuff that's being shouted on these campuses. Vanderbilt's just trying to embrace the same thing, and I think they're showing themselves. You've got a lot of these people now that are saying, well, the protesters, a lot of them are paid protesters. They're not actually.
Yep.
Yeah, but.
So
but
disagree.
Faculty,
you're so right.
But the faculty that join arms and block the police from getting to the protesters, those faculty members are faculty members. Those are associated with the universities, and the universities aren't doing anything at all to them.
I am so impressed that you go ahead.
By the way, can you imagine the same tolerance being exhibited if a bunch of white guys were waving Confederate battle flags, walking through campus, shouting at black students, "Go back to Africa"? Do you think the universities, do you think the media would show any tolerance for that?
No. To answer your question in short, no, but you're so right, and I'm over. I'm seeing people carry the water for some of these students at these Ivy Leagues. Well, most of them are paid protesters. They're being funded and shipped in by George Soros himself. Nope, because the second these kids, like at Princeton, for example, their faculty that actually had cojones came forward to them and said, if you continue the little tent charade, we're going to expel you and take away your Ivy League degree. They ran in panic because these protests are coming from students. It's not just these these distractors from like George Soros University. I don't think that's an actual school, but you get my drift.
At the very least, they may be funding it, they may be directing it, but the useful idiots on these campuses are the students. The same way that as they start arresting them, they're going, but I have finals, can't you just let me go? Yeah, I'm sorry, that is a student. And the few that don't have their face masks on are being identified as students, but also, again, you've got the faculty members. The shameful thing, Ben, is that these arrests will end up being dismissed the same way that you had the attack on our border agents down in Texas. The judge dismissed the case against the rioters. You're going to see these cases get dismissed by these same liberal, pro-woke, pro-terrorist, anti-American district attorneys. The same Alvin Bragg that's going after Donald Trump is not going to prosecute those who violently and maliciously invaded and occupied property at Columbia University. He's not going to go after that. He's a political hack who's going to go after Donald Trump and let real criminals escape any responsibility or accountability. And these universities that will, quote, suspend these students, the suspensions are going to get reversed. And those that are announcing we're going to expel them, we'll see if their actions follow their words. I doubt that it does.
Yeah. All right. Well said, Steve. You must have drunk coffee this morning because I like the energy. All right, guys.
Every morning.
Follow Steve on X at The Gill Report. Steve, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Ben. Talk to you next week.
Guys, I'm struggling. We just lost one of our statues in the... What's going on over there? Did Yoda just fall over? Is that the Donald Trump statue? There was a massive boom. So here's why I'm conflicted, because now I'm agreeing with John Fetterman, the hoodie dude. Here's what he had to say. Quote, the protesters at Columbia demonstrated that there are two factions of the protesters. There's the pro-Hamas, and then there's the really pro-Hamas. We'll be right back.
It's easy to listen to the Mighty 990 KWAM at work. Just go to Mighty990.com and click on the Listen Live icon.
All right, so we've got to talk about the very successful prayer dinner for Israel that was held right here in Memphis. It had quite some incredible speakers. I know the governor was supposed to be there, Jim Strickland, now the Dean of Law at the University of Memphis. And of course, my guest that's live in studio, Jason Kaplan, who's the entrepreneur, musician, and founder of the Bridge Institute in 2004. He then created the Universal Language Room, of which we've talked about on the show. He's also over Memphis Friends of Israel. Jason, welcome into the studio. How are you?
Thank you. Hey, Ben. Doing good. How are you?
So I saw some of the photos of this gathering, the prayer dinner for Israel.
Yes.
What a remarkable showing of support.
It's amazing. It revives the soul. And it's not really an exaggeration. I really came in there thinking, wow, the world is tough. And to have probably 300 Christian friends, maybe 100 Jewish friends all get together and talk about the God of Israel, the belief in freedom, democracy, freedom for all people, protection of minorities, which we in America share with the state of Israel, uniquely the state of Israel in that part of the world. And it was incredible. Pastor Lindbergh, I tip my hat so much to him and his son, Jonathan Lindbergh, at First Assembly there on Walnut Grove. Incredible people.
Yeah. I mean, there are some silver linings to this divisive, hateful rhetoric that we're saying.
Yeah.
You've got the guys at UNC. Did you see them? They took down the Palestinian flag at their campus where originally the American flag is. They tore that down, not the boys, the frat boys. But you had the frat boys coming forward and standing around the flagpole to get the American flag up there. You had the chancellor of UNC. We actually have some audio. The interim chancellor, his name is Lee Roberts. Here's what he had to say in the face of these anti-Semitic protests. Take a listen in cut number 14.
This university doesn't belong to a small group of protesters. It belongs to every citizen of North Carolina. Everybody in North Carolina. Everybody who goes to school here. Everybody who lives and works here. The flag represents all of us. To take down that flag and put up another flag, no matter what other flag it is, that's antithetical to who we are, what this university stands for, what we have done for 229 years.
I want to get your response, as even this morning, LAPD dismantling these pro-Hamas encampments at UCLA's camp base. Oh, what's going through your mind?
Stark contrast are the two words, I think. Stark contrast. When you see a pro-Israel rally, you see people holding the American flag. They're rallying. They're chanting for peace, for understanding, for the support of democracy. When you see this other side, I wouldn't even call them pro-Palestinian because they're just pro-Hamas. They're destroying things, covering their face, threatening, intimidating. It's all violence-based, okay? And they're saying they're against colonialization, you know? And what are they trying to do? They're trying to take over institutions when they're against... none of it makes any sense, but really, unfortunately, there is an anti-Jewish, anti-Semitism that pulses through a lot of societies, unfortunately, and has come up to the surface. And I'm very proud of these UNC presidents and the police for stepping and saying no.
So what's fascinating about the two different sides of this, because you're right, and there was a video that went viral. It was a Jewish woman, and she said, you know, these Jewish kids on these campuses, they're happy warriors. I mean, if anybody has the right to be screaming, I'm a victim, it's the ones that are being barred from classes. My God. So here's what she had to say. I want you to take a listen to this in, guys, we've got this. Let me look down through my cut list. Here it is in cut 15.
When we go out there, we have nothing to hide. There's people that when they go out there right now, these days, they're hiding behind masks because their words are not truth. The Jewish people say, Shlomo HaMelech, when you go out there, let them see your eyes. Let them see how they shine when you speak about love, when you speak about values, when you speak about ideals, when you speak about your Judaism that means so much to you. And let them hear your voice, because you have nothing to be scared of when you open your mouth. Because you will never say things like intifada and death to America. It's not in your vernacular. All you have in here is love and truth and grace. So speak up, show the world your face. And our incredible students on college campus, we are so proud of you. And there's no face more beautiful than yours. And there's no voice more pleasant than yours. And we're right behind you. And we'll continue to be right behind you.
Amazing. Your reaction.
Yeah, I love that video because it shows exactly who we are as the Jewish people in the state of Israel, which is this is who we are. This is what we believe. We come and we meet people. We have dialogue. Everybody knows that the state of Israel is not perfect. And there's a lot of groups that debate, what should we do? On the other side, and throughout, this is what really bothered me, October 7th, October 8th, is throughout the whole entire Muslim world, where were the 10,000, 20,000 imams and religious leaders who said, no, we can't have this anymore. That's wrong what happened. But it was silence. Unless someone shows me something different. And then the state of Israel went to defend itself and the whole world criticized the state of Israel for defending itself. What was their alternative plan? Nothing. Silence. So when you hear this woman talking so beautifully of, we have to defend ourselves. Nobody wants an offensive war in the state of Israel. We have to, Israel defense forces to protect ourselves. We're just dealing with ideological battles and physical battles, and but we don't hide our face.
Want to get your response. There was a young man, he goes to Columbia. He's a Jewish student. He was on Fox yesterday. His name is Xavier Westergaard. And here's what he had to say to the administration and also his university. Cut 16.
There needs to be strong, unequivocal condemnation of the actions that have happened on these campuses. They can't shift the blame from faceless outside agitators away from the students on our campus who are engaging in this despicable way. And there needs to be a serious review of how the universities are funded, because if they're receiving funding from the federal or state government, that has to come with a lot of strings. And if they can't protect our rights as Jewish students, they shouldn't be receiving a dime.
So what do you make of that? Because I think what we're seeing at these college campuses, it's been lying dormant for years. They get these talking points from nowhere.
That's right. I mean, and there are professional agitators out there, but they're mostly students that are doing this. And it's taxpayer funded. And why are taxpayers funding kids to sit out and take over campuses, not let people study? I mean, it's a university. It's an open place for study and dialogue. And they're shutting the whole concept down. So we're paying for the anti-university. Mm-hmm. Why?
I am curious, and I know you're not a political guy, so I am. I'm curious how Jewish Americans are viewing the rhetoric coming from the administration, where they are trying to walk that fine line of saying everybody has the right to peacefully protest, and we do condemn anti-Semitism, but also you must understand the Palestinian resistance.
Yeah, I don't know if I heard them say you have to understand the Palestinian resistance. I've heard this administration just walk both sides. And this sort of relativism is really dangerous. I think the Biden administration has done some very strong things for Israel. I think they've done some very injurious things. But I think the rhetoric that I'm hearing is you have a right to protest. Let's just stop playing the game. They're not protesters. They're advocates for violence. So when we say, oh, these advocates for violence on campus, that they're not protesting anything. They're advocating intimidation, violence, and bullying, and then they dress themselves in this moral thing about that they're protesting for a cause. No, wrong. Just don't give in to that narrative.
So I was in Long Island. I was on Long Island, and my friend does a lot of work with the state of Israel, and she's always over there. And we were talking about this because she's made multiple trips since October 7th, mm-hmm. and she pulled up some of the videos and some of the maps. And it was an educational experience for me because I didn't realize we talk often about the Palestinians that are quartered or sectioned off in places like Gaza. But when you look at the actual state of Israel, they share border, they share communities with folks that want to kill them. And it was quite unbelievable because if we were to take this in an American mindset, and if you were telling Americans that they did not have the right to defend their borders, that would never fly. So you've got Rafah, and someone said it so well because Netanyahu has said, we're going to go in and finish the job.
Right.
And you've got, 80% of the militants destroyed, but you've got a section left. But you've got the U.S. saying, we're not going to support any more of this invasion into these places because of the humanitarian crisis that it's causing. Mm-hmm. But that would be like telling someone whose house is on fire, we're going to put out 80% of your fire and leave the rest.
That's a good example. I mean, people have to understand jihad. Jihad says we win if not all of us are killed. So that's the brutal reality. So Israel has to say, if the world doesn't come in and get our hostages back and put every type of pressure on Iran and call for the surrender of Hamas, we have to go take our hostages back and kill the terrorist threat. And if they don't, then Hamas says, we won. And then Hezbollah says, no, we don't want you to win. We want to be number one. And they're going to compete on trying to attack Israel. So that's the problem.
Jason Kaplan, he's the entrepreneur, founder of the Bridge Institute, started the Universal Language Room in 2004. One thing that I have not heard these pro-Hamas demonstrators say yet is release the hostages.
Exactly.
Because if you wanted a ceasefire, and I think that's their end goal, it would end.
It would end. It would end. If the world had any moral courage and said, wait a minute, Israel shouldn't have had to go in, we'll take a UN army, a Muslim army, an Arab army, and we'll stop the threat, then we wouldn't be here. So the whole world plays this terrible game of, oh, we can't stand war and violence. Okay, get the hostages out.
Mm-hmm. You went to Israel after October 7th. Last time you were in studio, we talked about the documentary you filmed.
Yes.
You were a quarter of the way through, 50% through. The documentary is done.
It's done. It's done. It's on ULR1.com, and it's just a beautiful view of Israel. Israel, a state of Jews, a state of Arabs, Druze. And we met with middle school kids who are Muslim, Bedouins. We went to meet with Christian Arabs who all love the state of Israel. And the video shows that music and the teachings of Rabbi Abraham Abulafia can bring people together who want to be together. And it's not a war of Jew versus Arab out there at all. It is jihadi versus democracy. And there are just many Druze and Baha'is and Arabs that love the state of Israel. So that, I hope that all comes through the documentary. You can see it right on our front page.
All right, good stuff. That link to this film that you need to see is ULR1.com. Again, that is ULR.com. Or you could look up the Bridge Institute. Mm-hmm. Type in Jason's name and you're going to find it as well. Jason, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, Ben. You're doing great work. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
the Mighty 990 AM and online at Mighty990.com. KWAM.
Uncle Sam is right here. Look at him. You are perfect. He's in good shape. Thank you, Uncle Sam. Look at this guy. You think Biden can bend down like that? I don't think so. And we're leading virtually every swing state by a lot. And we're going to make America great again. Biden has run the government like Robin Hood, essentially in reverse. Stealing from the poor and giving it to the rich. And we're going to throw out Bidenomics and we're going to replace it with MAGANomics, MAGANomics. But isn't it nice to have a president who doesn't need a teleprompter? Not that he can read it anyway.
That was President Trump at a big rally in Wisconsin yesterday. This after some new polling, this coming from Bloomberg News. Their morning consult poll showing up Trump up in all of the, Nevada, he's up 8 over Biden. Wisconsin up 4 over President Biden. North Carolina, he's up 10%. Arizona up 7 over President Biden. Georgia up 6 to Biden. Pennsylvania, it's a nail biter. He's up 1 point. That's my home state. Michigan, Biden is up 2%. Nationally, if you look at it, Trump is up 4% over President Biden. So, of course, this prompts a media freakout. So you guys see the big time piece where they feature President Trump? So it's a great shot of the president. But the headlines following this article on what a second term for President Trump would look like piped out headlines like this. Trump again vows mass deportations and won't roll out political violence. It's not what he said at all, but of course the media is going to cherry pick and run with it. I.e., here's the freakout. Cut 23.
I read this big time interview this morning, and it's Trump in his own words saying these scary things. There won't be guardrails next time. So he's admitting he's going to staff a White House and the entire federal government with either liars or lunatics.
Mm-hmm. If he is elected to serve a second term as president, he plans out loud to drag our country into a dark new era, a place we've never been before, more closely resembling authoritarianism.
You either vote and you vote for the country you grew up in and try to fix that, or you go to dictatorship.
And it almost felt like a call to arms to his supporters. Yeah. Like, you know, stand back, stand by.
This is how Hitler talked before he seized power. It is how Mao talked. It is how Mussolini talked. Stop him now. While we still can.
So in this piece, the reporter actually asked Trump, when you become the next president, are you going to weaponize your DOJ against these crooked prosecutors that are right now prosecuting you? And he said, no. I just want to get the country back on track. Does that sound like something Hitler would do? Stalin would do? Mao would do? Hell no. That's the answer. So these people are unbelievable. What? A dictatorship? It's not like we went and lived through 4 years of Trump. Actually, the country did fantastic. So we've got to talk about Puppygate, Cricketgate, whatever you want to call it, Cricket Lives Matter. I mean, the dog. So Kristi Noem made her first media appearance since his story broke via The Guardian. She went on Hannity last night, and here's what she had to say. Cut 6.
In your words, why it came to that decision? I mean, unfortunately, dogs that are violent sometimes have to be put down. But I guess people, because you shot the dog, said, is there a difference which way you put a dog down? I'm not really sure, but I don't think people understood it. I want to give you a chance to explain.
Well, Sean, you know how the fake news works. They leave out some or most of the facts of a story. They put the worst spin on it. And that's what's happened in this case. I hope people really do buy this book and they find out the truth of this story. Because the truth of this story is that this was a working dog And it was not a puppy. It was a dog that was extremely dangerous. It had come to us from a family who had found her way too aggressive. We were her second chance, and she was, the day she was put down was a day that she massacred livestock that were part of our neighbors. She attacked me, and it was a hard decision. And the reason it's in the book is because this book is filled with tough, challenging decisions that I've had to make throughout my life.
Okay, so the dog, the 14-month-old puppy, was massacring chickens. Also, in that audio, the dog attacked Christina. Is anybody buying this? You know, and she's a good governor. Not perfect, but it was an imperfect decision to allow this story to be leaked, because you wrote about it and then you sent excerpts of the book to The Guardian. What do you make of it? I mean, clearly there's a spin effect happening where maybe she can put it back. I don't know that this ultimately undoes the excerpt about the dog Cricket. But very interesting. Wanted to read down through a couple of your comments before we skip to the end of the show, because you guys have been vocal. And I'm going to have all the time to get into the comments on X. But Amy writes this, referring to these pro-Hamas students. It's all about parenting. Our kids are done with college, grown and out working, but they would never be one of these clueless protesters. It's downright shameful that our culture has come to this. If you cannot raise good kids, don't have them. Well, I've seen some of these activists. I don't think they're going to have any issues with that. I don't see them procreating. And I hope that's the case. Justin Johnson writes, good on North Carolina. And of course, referring to the frat boys there. Kelsey writes, let's go, Brandon. So Amy has a great point. So we talked about going through MPD's Twitter to pull the stats on the homicides in the month of April. She said we need to get a summer intern to gather these stats daily. Yeah, because someone asked us where these shootings actually occurred. Can we get the zip codes? And we could, because MPD will release a little bit of information. Basically, there was one person shot. They were taken to, a hospital in critical condition. And they will drop the physical address of the shooting. So we could gather that and get the zip code. So we just need to hire a summer intern. Dylan, we pay our interns, don't we? He's shaking his head yes. So management, if you're listening, let's get on that. Because I spent all day yesterday going through them, and I felt like I was high after it. Like my mind. I don't smoke. Tim writes this, Ben, I will attend an event for prayer today in Collierville on the square. He adds, you and the great staff at KWEM will be in my prayers with thanksgiving for what you do every single day. Keep telling the truth. Well, we appreciate that, Tim. We appreciate all of our listeners who genuinely, we have one goal, and that is to stop Memphis crime. So join that effort by going to our social media pages, because they grow every single day and we're getting louder in City Hall. Believe me, they're listening. So go check out our stuff on X. Also, you can follow us on Stop Memphis Crime as well on Facebook. And we'll pick it up tomorrow, bright and early, starting at 7. Take care.